Hello and welcome to the fourth night of Millennial 2019, and I'm here with my first guest this evening, who is Marcus Follin, aka the Golden One. Marcus, welcome to Millennial.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Excellent. So would you like to start by telling people about what kind of year you've had?
I've had a quite great year, I would say. So the birth of my daughter, so that was the high point of it, and now she's sleeping in the other room, so if I'm a bit calmer in my speech, it's to not wake her up, but yeah, so that was nice, and yeah, it's been a good year.
And you also passed 100k on YouTube, didn't you?
Yes, exactly. That was about a month ago, so that was also a long time in the making, and yeah, it felt quite great to finally pass it. So
I think you might well be the last of us to reach 100k on YouTube. I've just got a feeling.
Yeah, so yeah, it's
congratulations.
Yeah, on the other hand, that's also been a stress moment, the censorship, so but you know, some good, some bad.
Oh yeah, for sure. So a theme that has been going through this millennial so far is that we are at the end of a decade and the 2010s. And so what are your thoughts on that? What kind of what would you say are the important things that have happened in the 2010s?
Oh, it feels like basically everything has happened during this decade. It feels like, at least from my perspective, so for the record, I'm 30 now, so I've lived my 20s during the this decade, basically. It sort of was a new world that came in 2010 something. I remember so clearly that I was in the army in 2009, and before that, no one had smartphones. But then when I started university after getting out from the army, so yeah, in 2010, I saw people having having smartphones in the class, etc. And I felt something. It was sort of like a change in the world. It was a, you went into a new era. So
I know exactly what you mean. I remember the same thing, thinking that this is a new era. There's something, this is going to change everything. It's not like, it's when, like when the internet arrived and then when smartphones arrived, because the smartphone is something so futuristic. It's like the tricorder in Star Trek. It's the thing that you take everywhere and it does everything.
Yeah, definitely. And it felt like before 2010, the internet and YouTube and everything, it was still sort of, well, it wasn't fringe per se, but it was something that was a bit more in the periphery. But now, with perhaps smartphones, etc., it's been, YouTube is very central in everything. And of course, this is why they need to censor it, so it can be safe for corporations to market, etc. You know, you have Facebook has had its heyday and also its decline. So that is quite interesting to see. When I started my Facebook page in 2013, that was actually the primary thing. I wanted to have a big Facebook. But now, I barely use Facebook anymore because it's outdated in a sense. I still post every once in a while, but it's something that I don't really care about it. If I was being blocked, if I was being my page deleted tomorrow, I wouldn't really care overly much. So you see this.
I'm the same, and I started a Millennial Wars Facebook page at the time when I created the channel, but I've barely updated it in like the last 2 years. I think Facebook is a dead well, it's not dead, but it might as well be dead. It just feels like it's a slow website. It's badly designed. It's run badly. And then, of course, the massive censorship that goes on there. To me, Telegram is the future. So I'll just again plug my Telegram channel, MW Public, which will be linked in the live chat.
Yeah. I have a Telegram as well. So, the Golden One there. And yeah, I definitely agree. I view my Telegram now as the heir of my Facebook. So it's basically I can post, you know, interesting articles, shorter commentaries, etc.
It's great. I love Telegram. It's instantaneous.
It's really
Yeah, I mean, you can put wee videos on there, any files, any images, and like on Twitter, you can post opinions as well.
Yeah, so you're banned on Twitter. You've been banned for quite some time, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, right.
about a year and 2 months now. I mean, I'm on there with sock accounts, but even they get banned, and not even because of who they're me, but I just keep getting banned for replying to people. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I do. I am on there.
Yeah.
But I mean, Twitter itself also feels just, as I was saying to, I think, Survive the Jive the other night, that it also feels like it's had its heyday to me. Now, what would you say about that?
Yeah, I'd say it has a bit longer to live than Facebook in being relevant, just because people can reach out to various celebrities. So I saw J.K. Rowling's got, she took some heat from her own side because she wasn't far left enough. And you see, it still has a sort of impact that the masses can have on certain celebrities. So I do think Twitter is still relevant in that sense. But there is, a danger with it, because it can be a proper time sink where you scroll and interact, etc. So for us as content creators, we of course have to be careful so we don't spend 2 hours on Twitter when we could have made a video.
And I got completely addicted to it. I was on it far too much towards the end. It just goes on forever. It's in that sense, it is a fantastically well conceived and well designed website, because it's just endlessly interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one thing I don't really like with Twitter is that if I make a post about something, if I have a really profound thought, it feels like it will be gone after just a few hours. Whereas if I make a video, or if I make a blog post, or if I write in a book, something, the words are a bit more immortal in that sense. So it's better for me, for example, to formulate a good thought and then put it somewhere else. So it was sort of the same thing on Facebook. Your posts, they disappear in the timeline just because you post new stuff. So,
it's very ephemeral. That's also true of Instagram. And I know that you're on Instagram. You've got a very good following on Instagram. And also Telegram in the same sense. It is all very short term.
Yeah.
But, it functions like a drug. So be careful with Twitter, kids. I'm a casualty. it does feel, maybe if I still, and I'm not moaning about this, don't worry, I'm just going into speculation here. It's possible that if I still had my real account, I would not feel that the platform was redundant. But at this point, I'm on there with like 1,000 followers or something, which is a 20th of what I had. And so it doesn't, I simply can't use it as a public figure would use it. I can use it as a troll would use it, or an anon would use it. Yeah. So for me, it just feels pointless. Not pointless. I just use it to have fun. I don't use it for, to sustain the Millennial Woes brand, let's put it that way. I think maybe if I did, I would still feel it was a very relevant website. As it is, more because of the censorship, I think it just feels to me like it's kind of pointless being on here, because I can't, no one can be honest. The liberals, they can critique us. If we reply to them, we get done for harassment or whatever it is. So it's kind of silly.
I think there is also a certain danger in Twitter. The format is like quick replies to each other without really giving time to perhaps reflect. And then you might say something that you might have not said if you got to think a bit more. And then, of course, those sort of replies, made in effect, made in anger, of course, they can be reported. Then you get banned for it. Or even worse, if you have some you know, British media, you know how the British media is. Swedish media is not as bad, but still not nice people in the least. And I mean, they can just go in, figure out, okay, this guy commented this or that about this group, and then they publish it everywhere, and he gets fired and has his life ruined, basically, just because the format is suited to that quick reply and angry replies and everything. So
yeah, I used to love it. I loved arguing with people, and even when it would come to insults and whatever, I used to really enjoy it. But of course, nowadays, as I say, it's dangerous to do that for the reason you've given, and also for the banning reason as well.
Yeah, and also I made a video earlier today about blackpilling, and it can be if you're only on Twitter and if you follow a lot of right-wing guys who post a lot of negative news, it can be quite bad for your psyche. It can be, if you constantly hear how everything is going to shit, it might be, you know, you might have bad days. And I felt, you know, you're in Britain, I'm in Sweden. There's a lot of things going on. So
indeed. I mean, people, Sweden gets unfairly selected as the worst place, like the worst example of self-defeat, self-immolation, surrendering to immigration and so on. And I don't think it's fair because, you know, I think, well, is Britain any better given Rotherham?
I mean, you know, if we compare the two, like Britain is 10 times worse than Sweden. I mean, Great Britain and America, that's where Sweden will be if things continue to go along this way. So, I mean, but the point with Sweden is that we went from being so good to being just, it's like this. If you have a young guy who gets the best grades in everything, he's a top athlete, he is well-liked by everyone, he has plenty of friends, he has all the girls, and he has, you know, everything is going so well. And then
he created ABBA.
Yeah, exactly. That too. And IKEA and Volvo. And then he starts doing drugs. First, it's like, okay, he gets drunk one night. You know, it's okay. Stuff like that happens. Then he starts taking cocaine, and then it goes on. And by the time you can see the trajectory where he's going, and that is the true tragedy of Sweden, that it was so good. And then it's just sheer madness what has been going on. So if you look at Sweden, is still better than any Eastern European country in a lot of ways. But Eastern Europe has been going up, like from communism, has gotten better every time. You know, there is progress in the good sense. I mean, you know, women can still be secure. Things are looking up for them. But Sweden is going the completely opposite direction. And, you know, if we say that a certain country in the former Soviet Union is very corrupt, everyone understands why it is corrupt. Yeah, it's because they're still poor, because they don't have a lot of money. So if a policeman gets, you know, some extra money per month to look the other way for something, that can maybe feed his children. So that is something you can understand. But in the Swedish case, it's a mental illness in a way that it's hard to logically understand. So you understand certain crime, corruption, but when it comes to Sweden, it's so much insanity, and that's sort of, yeah, it gets to your mind. That's the true tragedy of Sweden, I would say.
It really is so sad, because I was in Stockholm earlier this year for Skanza. That's where I did the Hope Not Hate speech. It was uploaded a few weeks, two weeks ago. And it was lovely. It was really beautiful. And actually, it seemed better to me than it did when I first visited in 2017. I don't know why that was. It seems perhaps that all of the refugees had been dispersed from Stockholm and outwards into the towns. But of course, that's a worse situation, really, in some ways. Yeah, Stockholm was lovely, and you see these Swedes, and there's a definite phenotype, there's a definite look, as there is in Norway and as there is in Denmark, and you just think, God, you know, please don't let this die. It hits you hard. You know, even as someone, I have no connection to Sweden. Actually, I was looking at my 23andMe last night, and I think I've got like 2% Scandinavian DNA. So right. I had that very slight connection to Sweden. But even for someone who's an outsider, it just seems so precious. It seems like something that just should be protected. And it's astonishing that they can't see it themselves, that the Swedish people don't think we are special and should be preserved.
Yeah, and that's also why I stand out quite a bit. I mean, as a special case in Sweden, because I don't have the typical Swedish mentality when it comes to promoting yourself. And that's something, you know, I think it's good to be humble. I think it's good to, you know, we have this Jantelagen, it's called. You might have heard of Jantelagen. It's actually Norwegian originally, but it's basically to be very, very down to earth and not to talk so highly of yourself. This is true to a certain extent. You can do it if you are, in certain cases you can do it, but it is more of an Anglo-American thing to be able to be quite, you know, bombastic, such as Donald Trump, for example. If he were to try that in Sweden, people would be, they would just cringe. And it's the same thing. I could never have done my journey in Swedish because people would just think that was cringe too, because I am so, you know, bombastic and out there. Now, of course, I'm a bit more humble and more Swedes can relate to me. But in the beginning, it was, I knew full well that this isn't a Swedish behavior at all. And this can be good, of course, that you are humble and down to earth. But it also gets to a point, and especially now when you have that somewhat in the background, and then you have all the anti-Swedish propaganda that's been really, really hard, on par with Germany and Great Britain. I mean, the anti-Swedish propaganda in Sweden, yeah, that might actually be the worst in the entire West, the sheer intensity of it. So you have a really bad confidence in a lot of young guys and girls, of course, because they get bombarded with it. So in my view, it is to a large part about, you know, just a lack of self-respect that makes people, you know, vote for bad alternatives. So
that's an interesting point in itself. I mean, how do you think this, can you give some examples of this propaganda and brainwashing and so on, and say how you think this, what psychological effect you think that has on people?
Yeah, so basically we can take an example that comes up every Christmas. So apparently the Christmas tree originates from Germany. And because of this, we need to accept immigrants from the entire world in the hundreds of thousands. Doesn't make any sense at all, but you have these sort of things the entire time. I remember I had a conversation or a discussion with my teacher when I was 18, and I had jeans on. And she was like, oh, you're against multiculturalism, but you have jeans on. That's from the United States.
So oh, have ha, that. Ha, ha, very clever.
Yeah, yeah, and she thought she was so clever there. My teacher, of all, she had to like, put me down. And I responded like, okay, what does this have to do with Sweden's immigration policy that I have an jeans on? So you see,
it's
and
so silly. Sorry to interrupt, but the idea that because we wear products from different countries, therefore we should just be replaced in our own homelands.
Mm.
You know, even when you put it like that, it's just so obviously stupid.
Yeah, and the same thing with sushi, for example. All Swedes love sushi. And I don't think there is any Swede, no matter how nationalist or right-wing they are, I don't think anyone has any problem with the Japanese population in Sweden, because they aren't a problem in the least. But they use these sort of things. So like, okay, you like sushi, so therefore you need to love mass immigration from all across the world. So you have those sort of things all the time, and you have the school. And it has come to my attention that they show my videos in Swedish schools and say, okay, don't watch this guy because then you will get radicalized and become a right-wing extremist. I get people sending screenshots, or like they take with their telephones and it's like, okay, golden one in school today. So
that's but, great. It must make you glad that, about all the smartphones.
So yeah, yeah.
Get this evidence.
Definitely. So basically, the teaching profession, especially among women, is very, very left wing. So that's why you have, why would they think that I am bad when I only want to keep them safe? Yeah, it's because they've been brainwashed into believing that I, or guys like us, are the epitome of evil. So you have that sort of attitude still. So you've had from the cultural elite, celebrities, artists, even sports stars, and the school, and the media, and Hollywood as well. So you're just having that hammer down, shoved down your throat for a very long time. So there you have a, you know, a sensation in a lot of Swedes that, you know, Swedish culture is only boring and everything exotic and fun comes from outside. And that's also something some Swedes, they want to appear more worldly. Yeah, exactly. They want to be cosmopolitan because being Swedish from the countryside, for example, is seen as being bumpkin, a country bumpkin or something. So they want to, and this is mainly true for perhaps the people in the cities, they want the posture and virtue signal and show their social status that, my friends in New York, we went for this really cool tapas bar and had, fine wine or something. So it becomes sort of like, for me, I can only look down on them. Just as they try to look down on, you know, regular working people. But I look down upon them because they're so pathetic. These posturing inner city liberals without any sort of, you know, reality or inequality in them. So,
yeah. And isn't it ironic? Because I think I'm right in saying that the vast majority of the Swedish population live in the countryside, in rural areas, not the cities. Am I wrong about this?
Well, I'd say in Stockholm, the Stockholm area is about 2 million, and in total we're about 9 or 10 million, I'd say. But there's a lot of smaller towns as well. But yeah, a lot of people in the countryside still.
Mm.
So,
and that's the situation in Britain. It's quite surprising because, obviously cities are so famous, notable, noteworthy, but actually most people do not live in cities. Most British people live in towns and villages, which is actually quite a nice thing, because when you do see British cities, you know, and especially the schools in British cities, you could be forgiven for thinking that, you know, the British people simply don't really exist anymore, but actually they do. That's an important white pill.
Yeah, I've been to England twice, first in London in 2012, and I was like, okay, is this the right town? Have we actually arrived in London, or is it is it somewhere else?
Yeah.
But I was in in England now earlier when we met.
In Manchester, a town near Manchester.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was really nice, really white-pilling, the conference, and also just I had a stroll through town, just, you know, see what was up. And it looks cozy and nice, so there's a difference for sure.
That town was one of these northern ex-industrial towns, and there were a lot of newcomers there. So that.
Aha, okay. I must have missed them.
Really? I'm surprised. Because I thought that wasn't a very good representation of an English town, because there were, you know, so many. But anyway, so let's get back to the propaganda and what effect that has on people. Because I think you've mentioned two things: the lack of confidence in their country, their culture, but also self-hatred as well of themselves as individuals.
Yeah, and I would say in the younger generation and in my generation, it's more common for women to feel this way. The younger guys, if we look upon who votes for what, it's basically the young women are voting for Miljöpartiet, basically the Greens, but we all know they're watermelons. So red on the inside, green on the outside, complete clowns. I have no respect for them whatsoever. Then you have on the guys are voting primarily for the Sweden Democrats, who I'm not a particular fan of that party and the people in it, but it's still a party that is better for Sweden than all the rest of the parties. So it's a good sign, at least, that people are voting for them. But a lot of young guys, they're just fed up, and they're also brought up with the internet. So they have seen, you know, the truth in a different way that perhaps the men who are a bit older, they haven't really been exposed to. So they only had the massive propaganda, and they didn't have the internet to counteract it. Then, of course, reality is the ultimate red pill for many. So many guys have grown up in multicultural schools. They don't want any more multiculturalism in their lifetimes. So they vote for it. But for the women, for the young girls, they're so heavily conditioned to not go outside the norm because, yeah, that's what girls are more prone to do, to stick to what is socially acceptable. So they don't want to break from that. As it looks right now, the Sweden Democrats, at recent polls at least, they are polling as the highest or the largest party. Then, of course, we don't know how to look in 3 years, but hopefully it can be that way then too.
There was a party recently, forgive my ignorance, but there was a party about 6 months ago in elections in Sweden that was expected to do very well and didn't match expectations at all. Was that the Sweden Democrats? Because I thought it was a different party.
Yes. So this is actually true for both Sweden Democrats and Alternative for Sweden. So Alternative for Sweden.
Right. It was that one I was thinking of. AFS.
Yes. So basically I voted for them, and I will do so next election as well. And that is primarily because I know the people in the party are good, decent, honorable men. Men who would otherwise go into high-paying career jobs. Whereas many in the Sweden Democrats, they are just as many other politicians. They've gone in there because they want to, you know, have a high-paying job, etc., without really taking, you know, the hard discussions, which the Sweden Democrats haven't really done as of late. So, yeah, that's why I voted for Alternative for Sweden. And they also have a very sort of drain the swamp mentality as well. They have an issue with a lot of the things that are going on in the politician class, because that's also something that, you know, you have journalists and then politicians, and then you have the common people or the regular normal taxpayers on the other side, and there is quite a lot of hostilities between them. So basically Alternative Sweden aren't really politicians, they are just regular guys and men and women who go in and say, okay, we need to do something about the situation, especially since Sweden Democrats, they don't propose adequate solutions. Which, of course, is to start repatriating people.
What kind of solutions do they propose?
The Sweden Democrats is basically only limiting immigration. And that's also always been the talking point that, oh, we have to decrease immigration. But, of course, I mean, we could completely shut off immigration, but you know, demographic still looks the way it does, and we still have the problematic areas, and the only thing we can do is to repatriate people.
I know that the identitarians have talked about remigration, which
exactly
another word for repatriate. I don't know why they call it that, but well, actually I think I do. I'm going to guess right now why they call it that. It's to emphasize that these people have already emigrated once, therefore it's not a big deal for them to emigrate again in the other direction, because we're always told that it's just the worst, that it's impossible to send them back home. It could never happen, that they're here now, that's it. But actually, that's not it. That's really not, that doesn't need to be the end of the matter. they're obviously not very attached to this place because, well, they left their ancestral country.
Yeah, exactly. And something to keep in mind here as well is that everyone in the modern world is rootless. I mean, to a large extent, even the most right-wing nationalist is also rootless.
Well, I made this point in a recent video. Yeah.
All right, yeah, yeah. So you have guys who live in southern Sweden, but their family lives in northern Sweden, and they have their friends in some completely different town. So, I mean, it's not only about what bioculture or which nationality you are. It's also like everyone is a victim of the modern world. So getting people to move, even getting someone within a country to go somewhere completely different, it's not so hard. The same thing with immigration. And also, let's be real, if you're from a culture, a bioculture, who are evolutionarily suited to be in the sun, British autumn or Swedish autumn or winter, it isn't all too pleasant. It is not even pleasant for us at a lot of times. So if I had dark skin, if I couldn't get enough vitamin D from the sun, because
like Cheddar Man or
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't thrive here because of purely biological reasons, because my skin can't produce enough vitamin D. And I mean, that's nothing controversial to say. It's just that you feel better if you are in an environment which you are evolutionarily adapted to. So, I mean, I don't think most of these, especially the younger generations of immigrants, I think they are longing home. I honestly think they do. I think they want to go home. I think they want to go home to their countries and feel at home there, be among their own people, so they don't feel like a second-class citizens here. Because even as much free stuff they get from the state, and they are given the benefit of the doubt, they can get away with a lot more. They can get away with a lot more crime, etc., at least in Sweden. But they still feel out of place. And I mean, humans are social creatures. I don't want to feel out of place. I want to feel that I belong somewhere. I want to feel that I fit in. Yeah. Same thing for them. And of course, they want to fit in.
I completely agree. And, you know, recently, today, actually, I just read a black British musician called Stormzy. I don't even know what genre. I was going to say rapper, but I don't actually know if he is a rapper. Anyway, he's worth £16 million. And he just said that Britain is absolutely a racist country. Now, the point that I'm going to make here is if even he is a multi-millionaire, and even he doesn't feel that he is welcome here or that we like him, he doesn't feel comfortable here. So I just, wouldn't the simpler thing be for him to return to Africa? It just seems like an obvious solution here. It's the same with many of these famous people who continually moan about how Britain or Sweden, I'm sure it happens in Sweden as well. Yeah. I know that it happens in Germany for sure, that we're just racist. We're just not being nice enough to them. And our entire society, our entire culture is not welcoming to them. And the obvious answer is, okay, go home, leave.
I think there's also a deep sense of resentment and resentment, as Nietzsche talks about. It's even though they get richer and richer, they still feel out of place. They don't feel welcome in the party. So if you have a group of teenagers and they have a party, and one guy is, he is at the party, but he knows he isn't really welcome, he will, of course, feel a resentment against the other partygoers, no matter how good he looks or whatever. I think it's the same thing with all of these immigrants who are very rich, that they still feel they don't get the recognition and the appreciation they think they deserve, because they have been told just as all of us have been told that money is the only thing that matters, and money is also the bar of your quality as a human being. So, and of course, this is true for whites as well. So you have guys like Justin Bieber who spat on his fans from a balcony window. Of course, he acts that way when everything is being told his entire life is that, you know, if you make enough money, you are better than everyone. So therefore, you can be mean to others. And if you have this sort of, okay, a black British guy, a black man in Britain, who he still doesn't feel that belonging. He still doesn't feel that he is a valued part of society. And then he looks at all of his money and says, but shouldn't this make me a king? No, it doesn't. And therefore, he that resentment is born within him. And of course, he feels, he feels rejected. And when you get rejected, you become full of resentment and you lash out. So,
yeah, it's not nice. It's a horrible feeling, actually, to rejection of any kind, any social rejection is one of the worst things that people can go through. And look, I, you know, to emphasize, because I know that my previous words might be used against me by liberals or whatever, I don't mean these people any harm. I'm simply saying from an objective, detached standpoint, even, you know, what would aliens think if they came down and saw this situation? They'd think, okay, these people arrived here. These people have been here for thousands of years. These people arrived in the last few decades. They're not happy. They should leave. That would be the obvious solution here, instead of the one that we're being asked to go for, which is that we change everything. Our thousand multi-millennial year long ownership of these lands just gets forgotten about. Why? That's insane.
Yeah, then of course, I mean, for all of these people who stay, it's of course about money as well. If you get a lot of money coming in every month, I think there has to be a very, very strong incentive for them to go somewhere else, unless of course they can make the same sort of money in another place. But we live in a modern world, and Mammon is the most powerful god. Money is king, simply put.
Yes, it's a very scary thing when you realize that all of this is ultimately, well, maybe not ultimately, but all of this is about economic processes. And people, you see, I've walked around various British cities and you see the way life is now. And there is absolutely no connection anymore. It really is just everyone is an economic unit.
Yeah.
Just doing something, and that's it. There's no more feeling of commonality than that.
Yeah, exactly. And this is also I'd say a very large part in explaining both why you have immigrants who hate on a certain country, but still they stay. And it also can explain why there is so much self-hatred and ignorance and just nihilism in regards to your own culture. Because if you take Sweden, for example, this is just an economic zone. Many guys or women, they don't care about some stupid, I'm doing this now, stupid Swedish traditions, because they're out to make money. They're out to make to go to a nice holiday to Thailand or a weekend to New York. They don't care about Odin and Thor and Christianity and our king that died 500 years ago. They're completely detached from it. They are economic units. They want to consume. They want to go travel. They want to have fun. And of course, it's normal. I understand this because they don't see 20 years into the future, which you and I, we see clearly where we're headed. For them, it's like, okay, I go to my I go to my work and I have a nice salary. I don't have a care in the world. It's what they are, thinking at least. And then someone comes along and says, you know what, we need radical political change and we need to upheave the order. And they say, oh, hold on now. You sound like a fascist to me.
I've had this conversation with even my own family a few years ago, relatives who no longer speak to me now. And it's sad, but you do get this sense that for the normal person, anything unusual or radical is something to be rejected. And I like, for example, I remember one of them saying to me, you think you know better than the government. And exactly. And I was like, well, yeah, or the government know better than me, but they're evil. So
yeah
I should disagree with them for either reason.
Yeah, exactly. And again, like as in Sweden's case, for example, this is also a very important factor. A lot of Sweden's problems can be explained by money also. It's like you've had people who are otherwise very much against immigration, but they can make a lot of money by renting out their hotels or their houses or their cottages to refugees. They take the opportunity because there is an economy around the great immigration to Sweden. So there is that incentive as well. And I'm completely sure that if there was a new government who has changed a few things and made it lucrative, financially lucrative, to repatriate people, there would be a lot of Swedes jumping on it because money is everything they care about.
I think there would be a lot, as we said earlier, I think there would be a lot of immigrants jumping on it because they could go back to their ancestral homelands with what would be a huge amount of money. Mm. And I mean, they could live like kings among their own people. But also, I mean, I think that we have to look seriously at the idea of giving them money for these countries to improve them. Let me put it that way. That's probably the nicest way. I mean, I don't know. There are other ways to say it that would sound more colonialist. I just mean helping these countries, improving them, improving their infrastructure, whatever. Because that is why so many of these people are coming up here. So. Mm. You know, I think that's what we should be looking to do so that they don't want to come to Europe. There's no need for them to do that. They've got a good standard of living there and they can be among their relatives and their ancestors and whatever.
Yeah, definitely. And then also, of course, we need to mention to everyone that the Middle East has been turned into, you know, a lot of chaos and a lot of wars due to, well, American aggression, for example. I know it's not the wishes of the American population, but the American deep state, at least. So, of course, no one is saying that, you know, the Middle East is completely hopeless. But when things are more stable there, I definitely agree that we could send down, you know, people to help build up and to make it, you know, solid prospect to return
and to maintain these, because someone's saying that would they be maintained in that way? Yeah, they, I'm sure we could. I'm sure this is not beyond our abilities to solve. The solution that we've found just now, which is to bring all these people up into Europe, is just insane. It's the worst possible. There's no reason for it at all because it means that everyone loses. Everyone becomes a deracinated economic unit. And we have racism in our societies from both directions and just chaos. So, no, it's not a good situation.
Yeah. And also, I must say that I don't think Iraq or Iran could ever be, or Afghanistan could ever be at the same societal level as Sweden, for example, with our measurement. But that's not to say that they can't have functioning societies, because they can. Definitely, they can. Sure, there might be more corruption in Iran, for example, than Sweden. But maybe if some Persian guys from Iran looks at Sweden and says, oh, you know, this is a completely malfunctioning society because of sexual liberalism, etc. That's a completely legit criticism of the West. So he might say, you know, our society is better. And yeah, to a large extent, I would agree. But anyway, point being is that I don't think it's hopeless for the Middle East to have stable and somewhat well-functioning societies by themselves. Then, of course, they cannot have the same level of freedom as we have because we're different, but they can still have a good society where they can thrive.
It certainly doesn't need to be a war zone. And that's, again, as you said, that's up to America. I mean, one thing I do see happening is... America, I don't think, is going to be the superpower that it is just now. I don't think it's going to remain that forever. Probably another few decades, but after that, almost certainly not. For demographic reasons in America. Mm. And at that point, I don't think it will have the ability, or at least it will have much less ability, to wage wars in the Middle East and ruin everything there so that they come up to Europe. So I think that in a sick way, that's a sign of hope, really, for us.
Yeah, then you have, of course, China completely taking over Africa. And who knows how that will end, but I'm sure they won't be as nice as the Europeans were. But I don't know. I can't speculate. I don't want to say too much at this stage.
Okay. I get it. But it's going to be a strange century for sure. We were going to talk about, we've been going for 45 minutes. We were going to talk about the 2010s and then go into predictions for the 2020s. So do you want to do that briefly?
Sure. So, anyways. Yeah, to give just a recap of the tens last decade, I would say the rise of smartphones, probably the most overall important thing. And in the coming decade, I think we'll see just an accelerated political situation in terms of nationalism and populism in most European countries. I'm quite sure of it. And especially since, I don't know if it's only me, but I've begun to feel a bit in the air that the left is reaching a climax soon. And soon it will be, you know, the cool counterculture will be us. Well, perhaps it's been us for a while, but I do believe that there is more people jumping off that bandwagon than is jumping on. For example, all of the people who saw J.K. Rowling's being cancelled by these leftists, they will probably think like, okay, these leftists, they aren't really for us, they aren't for me. You have also a Swedish Communist Party who went out very hard against, LGBTQ, Greta Thunberg, and something else. So basically, they want to say like, okay, how is this relevant to workers' rights, basically. So I do think we have a lot of leftists who will go away from that really aggressive sort of feminist cultural Marxist strain of lefticism, and might end up on our side, who knows. But that's also something I see, that the left is on the decline rapidly, and it will continue to just unravel over the last over the next few years, and populism will continue to grow.
We never mentioned Greta Thunberg or Thunberg.
It's Thunberg.
Thunberg.
Yes, you don't pronounce. We don't have the th sound. That's why I say D instead of th sometimes. So I say dat or dis. We don't have this sound, we have that. Okay. So Thunberg. Her mother is a quite infamous politically correct opera singer, actually. And she's been very vocal in, you know, open your hearts, open your homes.
So J.K. Rowling type.
Yeah, exactly. Same sort of person. And I had a hope for Greta that she would go her own way, but I think they subjugated her quite severely and just took her and said, you know, this is what's up now. Now it's this progressive left-wing agenda and not the environment. The environment isn't important at all now. That's basically what my analysis. Such a shame, because she, you know, great girl, otherwise passionate for her cause. I think she's a genuinely good person, but the wrong forces got their claws into her.
Right. I have to say, I hadn't noticed that she had abandoned the green issue, the ecology.
She hasn't. She hasn't completely. But, you know, when I talk about environmentalism, I am more interested in plastic pollution of the ocean. And you have, I posted actually on Facebook, and I got like 500 or 600 likes. It's not often I have gotten that as of late, but I posted like a comparison picture between Bojan Slat and Greta Thunberg. Just, you know, two texts. Bojan Slat has, I think it was like 16 when he developed a ocean-going plastic cleaning thing. And I mean, that is the sort of environmentalism I'm interested in, and which everyone should be interested in, because that's something very, very tangible. We know, okay, fishes are being contaminated with plastic, and we have hormones going out in the drinking water. We have, in the famous words of Alex Jones, they're turning the freaking frogs gay. Of course, everyone thought it was a joke at first, but yeah, it's sort of true. We have the same sort of thing with fishes. They change, can change genders. So you have a lot of things like hormonal pollution and that sort of stuff. But I haven't seen her talk about it. I have only seen her talk about CO2 emissions, and she hasn't even mentioned China, who pollutes like crazy. They are completely they're dedicated to just pollute the rivers. Same thing with India. They have a sacred river, but they pollute it. I don't know how they think there. But, you know, also in terms of CO2, not that I believe that is the core issue with anything. I believe just pollution, like plastic in the ocean, that's being a big problem. But she hasn't talked about it, and that makes me sad.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, she's a completely manufactured astroturfed thing, isn't it? It's not real. I mean, these aren't even, I don't believe these are even her real thoughts.
I think it is, though. I think because you have a lot of young people, and this was the case when I grew up as well. We got a lot of this in school. We got a lot of this sort of CO2 was the devil incarnate. And I do believe that she is sincere in her anguish for Mother Earth.
I agree with you. I think she's sincere, but I don't think these are her thoughts. I think that she's been told what to say. Of course, I think she believes it, but it's not coming from within her. I think it's her handlers. That's how it seems to me, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, as I see it, Greta is she's a nice young girl who's worried about the environment. She doesn't really know exactly what is the greatest threat. Someone tells her, okay, you know what, it's evil white societies that are polluting via CO2. And then she says, aha, okay, then I will speak about it. So I think she's a pure enough soul, but yeah, her handlers are steering her in the wrong direction.
Yes. So if anyone wants to post super chats, now would be the time. The link will be posted just now in the live chat. But there was a question about the nationalism rising and identitarianism rising over the next decade. Would you like to speak a wee bit more about that? Because I think it's a very interesting thing, because I think it seems to be happening quite organically, quite naturally in every country at the same time. I don't really see. I agree with you, and I also think that there is really nothing the powers that be can do to stop this. I mean, they can censor us off everything. It doesn't matter. This is going to happen anyway.
Yeah, so basically, if we study certain minorities, we can take actually the Ulster Protestants. We look at how they have survived up there. It's because they have very tight-knit communities. They have, you know, everyone knows each other. They have men grouping together doing stuff. And I see Swedes becoming a minority as well. Hopefully not. I don't want this to happen. But there is a real necessity on a day-to-day basis in schools, for example, for young European guys to group together just to be strong, because otherwise they will be picked up one by one. So the organic aspect is, they're left with no choice. They have to adapt certain mindsets. Tribalism, for example. Okay, we are of this bioculture now. We're European. Therefore, we need to stick together. Otherwise, we will get beaten up. This can be the case in schools. And then, of course, in other areas of life as well. So I see it growing, very organically, that people are saying, okay, this is what's up. We need to stick together now. And then, of course, also in terms of, as I mentioned, how the left will probably completely unravel. I think that's also getting more people to just, okay, enough. Enough is enough. I don't want to hear about this drag queen story hour anymore. I don't want this. So I think there will be more people just saying enough and start reacting a lot more because they're just tired of it.
Yeah. I actually saw just this afternoon footage from, I think last night it was, or recently anyway, from America of a high school, I think in Indiana, where a bunch of parents were rebelling against their children being taught about, you know, 100 different genders and stuff. Mm. The trans issue. And these parents were going to, they realized that if 100 children were withdrawn from this school, the school would lose $1 million in its budget, something like that. And that would be very damaging to the school. So the school would have to stop doing this. But it would, but first, these you'd have to persuade 100 or 100 sets of parents to withdraw their children.
Mm.
And of course, that's always the difficult bit, you know, collectivizing. It might not be so difficult in Sweden, but it's certainly difficult in the Anglosphere, as you said earlier. Too much individualism.
Yeah, I do believe Sweden and Germany and Holland, to a certain extent Holland, is in a better situation because we still have a bit more collectivist spirit, whereas yeah, Anglo-American, a bit more individualistic. But yeah, I believe that's something as well, and definitely something I will keep in mind when it's time for my daughter to go to school, that I will be on them. Like, I will check out, okay, what exactly are you saying here? If not, I will confront them. I will talk to every other father in the area, say like, okay, go and confront, because otherwise they will continue to do it. And that's also something they have gotten away with a lot of things because they haven't been confronted. And when I say confronted, it just go up and ask a question in a polite manner. It's not something violent, it's not something aggressive, it's just like ask a question, like, why are you saying this to our children? Why are you teaching this? Why is this good? So yeah
for sure, because I do think it's at the point now where it's obviously not good for them. I mean, there's absolutely no reason why a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old or a 9-year-old needs to know about sex or sexuality or gender. I think it's completely indefensible.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's about the collapse of the left. I agree. I think they are, and they have no reverse gear, so they are just going to keep going. And I think that they will damn themselves and doom themselves with this kind of thing. Okay, so we'll go to Super Chats. Somebody's saying, Woz, can you bring your camera closer? I want a closer look at your face. I'm sorry. This is to do with the lens. I'll tell you what. After tonight, once tonight's over, I will try. I'll do what I can. There's only like about, I don't know, 6 inches between the camera and the wall. But I'll do what I can to move it farther back and see how it goes. It's the lens. What can I say? Okay. And somebody asks, can the golden one give us a glorious flex?
Can you even see there? I'm doing a trap flex now.
I think I can make it.
There's a trap flex. It's my frog flex, I call it.
Hold on. Let me see if I can do it just you. No, it doesn't seem to work. How does that work?
He can watch plenty of my other videos. I have plenty of surprise flexes there. So
okay, all right. Okay, so that's that for Ready Salted. Ready Salted also says Native Americans, how can they complain about genocide when they wear jeans? Like that's from what you said earlier.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Okay, Martin Willett says, Merry Christmas, Woz. Thank you very much, Martin. It's nice to see you still around. Okay, and someone else says, did you watch The Witcher series on Netflix?
No, and I will not. I've heard about it's very inglorious, and I could have guessed from the beginning that it would be quite inglorious. So I won't even blackpill myself with seeing it. I don't want to be angry about yet another thing.
Okay, he does give a description of it, but I think you get the idea.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's very, you know, modern.
Mm.
All right. And then someone else says, leftists only care about unquantifiable abstractions to justify a one-world government, and right-wing environmentalism wants to revive the old tort law. I don't know what that is referring to, the tort law. I think that's something British. Leftists only care about abstractions in order to justify a one-world government. Do you think that's true?
I don't think leftists... I mean, the people on top, of course, yeah, they want more centralized power, but the average leftist only wants to make him or herself feel good. That's about it. And they carry a lot of resentment against everyone. They're angry at the world. They want to lash out, and they want to, yeah, you know, feel better in their hearts. That's their driving force, in my view, at least.
Right. I've worked out how to make you just solo. So if you could have another go at the flex, it might work now. Whoa! There we go. All right. Thank you. All right. I will now put it back to the two of us. There we go. All right. So another question. What advice would the Golden One have for those with addictions in order to medicate disorders? Alcohol, drugs, smoking, etc. What advice do you have for people with addictions?
It depends on what sort of addiction it is. Many people have addiction to coffee, but coffee isn't really bad. It's not a bad addiction because it comes with some health benefits. But if you have a detrimental addiction, it's just there's nothing more to it than to just stop. It's just willpower. It's not much more to say. It's just willpower. Stop one day and don't do it again.
But willpower is itself, and I've got to say this because you might have noticed I've been vaping throughout this stream because I thought that would be appropriate. But willpower is a very, I mean, it's not just there or not. It's a difficult thing for some people, including me, to acquire, to get. I mean, I think some people have it naturally and they're damn lucky.
Well, it's also about... the more it feeds itself, it's either a positive spiral or a negative spiral. If you have a lot of, if you fail your inner battle a lot, you will be weaker. But if you win your inner battle, you will be stronger. So if you continuously win against something, so if you continuously win a battle against your own mind where you say, you know, this is not a good idea, so I won't do it. So, for example, if someone is addicted to porn, for example, then he managed to stop himself, say, like, okay, I will not go into this site. I will not touch myself now. That's a victory. The next time will be much easier. And the third time will be much, much easier for him to win. And the fourth time will be, you know, walk in a park. And then he might have another addiction. Now he has four wins against pornography. And he is very confident in his abilities to overcome himself, then the other addiction, you know, it won't be a problem, most likely. Then, of course, if you have a guy who's, yeah, same guy, but he fails every time he watches porn, he can't stop. His next addiction, his willpower will be lower then as well. And I actually think there is an actual biological reason in your brain when you watch porn as well that is actually... neurologically decreases your willpower. You can Google it.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. I think that is true. I've been working on a series that will be published next year, and I do talk about this in there, where one thing builds on another. So, as you said, it's either a negative spiral or a positive spiral, and you prove to yourself that you have agency by using agency, by taking control. And the more you do that, the more you realize that you can do that. And I think at first it's very strange. You almost have to trick yourself. You almost have to take a risk. And as you say, just force yourself not to do that thing. So, but that's with some behavioral addictions. I think there are chemical addictions, which are a bit more complicated. But again, I'm sure that with sufficient willpower, they can be defeated as well.
Yeah, I mean, coffee addiction is an actual... If you are a coffee drinker, and then... So if you're used drinking two cups of coffee every day for a year, then you go off one day, you will have a severe headache because of a, you know, physical reaction in your brain. Then of course it will go away eventually and your brain will be restored. But chemical and physiological reactions to addictions, yeah, it's absolutely real. But can you manage it, then it's a good thing.
Yes. Okay, somebody is asking me to flex. I'm not doing it because it's too soon. I'm not that far down the path of redemption. So I'm not going to, it would just be ridiculous. Okay, somebody's saying, my wife and I are trying for our first child. What wisdom do you have as a new father? Things to watch out for?
I mean, most things will come naturally. It's hard to prepare. It's just like you will get ready when the time comes because you can't really, there's so many things you don't know at first. So my best advice would just be to view it as a learning opportunity. Take each day at a time and try to, yeah, just be there and be present. So yeah, I can't really give any good advice, but you know, you learn a lot of things, but you have to learn it yourself. Yeah, maybe not the most profound answer, but there it is.
Would you say that one of the most sort of notable parts of it is that it's a learning experience?
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Right. That's an interesting fact in itself, because a lot of people wouldn't think of it like that. That it's actually going to be a big learning thing.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know anything about children, and I wasn't worried either, because you know, men have become fathers since the beginning of time, and they didn't need, you know, a long tutorial to manage it. Then, of course, also all children might behave differently, so you have to learn how your child reacts, how it behaves, etc. So you can't really prepare too much either for it.
Right. Okay. There was one more. Okay, I've got two more questions. I think that many young men in the West use drugs and alcohol to cope with depression issues. They feel, why change if there's nothing worth changing for?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I know you have talked a lot about nihilism, and this is something that, you know, is a great danger to our civilization. And I think there is a lot to be won if we can just point them to, you know what, us over here, we're engaged in a struggle for our very civilization and ultimately for the survival of the entire Earth. You are welcome to join us. There you have a purpose. Because otherwise, a lot of guys, they don't have a purpose in the list. And of course, if you don't have something higher to live for, then it's easy to just, you know, let's go out drinking next weekend. And I know this is common for a lot of guys, even guys who are maybe even 30 years of age. They go out drinking on the weekends. And for me, it's like hard to relate to. But yeah, there it is.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of directionlessness in young men today, and I think it you can see why, you know, young men need things to do and not just mindless activity. They need something to be working towards. Every guy, not just young men, but especially young men, because they've got something to, they've got the energy and the insecurity that needs to be overcome and so on. So they need things, ways to do that, something to belong to, something to do, something to contribute to. And that could be all manner of different things. It's something that each man has to find out for himself. Sometimes it will be obvious to him. Sometimes it will take an annoyingly long time. But there we are. Okay. What vices has the Golden One had that he had to overcome? I don't know if you want to talk about this. But...
I can talk about it. I've been thinking about making a longer video on it as well. I would say sugar. I wish I hadn't eaten so much sugar in my years, because you know, nothing good comes out of it. So that's something I've begun to cut down on this year. I haven't cut it out completely. I eat it sometimes, but much less often now. But before, even when I've been cutting and being really shredded, I've still eaten sugar. But it's not good health-wise. It's not good for your teeth either. It's just, I wouldn't say it's poison, but it's definitely something I would see. Less sugar would be good. So basically what you can do if you're struggling with the same is to recondition your mind into believing that, you know, things such as cheeses, like nice cheeses with crackers, etc., that's the cozy snack you have in front of a movie. Because otherwise it's usually been sugar for me. I mean, you eat some chocolate or some marzipan in front of some sort of film, but now we try to eat cheese instead. So you recondition yourself, or some nice meats or whatever. But you see this, here's the reward you have, the edible reward. I removed the sugar and placed something else there instead. So it's the same reward I get in my mind, but it's just not sugar anymore.
Right, okay. So substitution. So that, okay, it's not just a loss, there's also a gain.
Exactly.
Okay. Then there was a very good question. Oh, all right. When you, this is to me. When you get sculpted and glorious, Woz, you can change your name to Millennial Pose and join the Golden One on a seat at Mount Olympus. Thank you.
Yes, I endorse this plan of action.
Okay. Thank you. I think that was from Ready Salted. Okay. The Golden One has granted me much motivation. Right, okay. Okay, I don't know what this means. I don't know if he's making, if he's having a laugh or not, because I don't know what these things, this acronym is. Yesterday, I had two big PRs in the gym. PR?
Personal records.
Ah, right, okay, great. Okay, so he's being serious. Okay, the Golden One has granted me much motivation. Yesterday, I had two big personal records in the gym. Bench for 136 kilograms and deadlift for 180 kilograms times 5.
Mm. That's really good.
I give many thanks to the Golden One for providing me motivation over the last couple of years.
Oh, thank you. It warms my heart to hear, and good going in the gym.
That was from TSUA, in case you recognize it. Okay, another one. There's one last question. Unless there are any final questions, let me see how long we've been going for. We've gone for a wee while, so we should wrap it up now. Any final questions, Super Chats, post them right now. How can we convince the people that their decadence is being exploited politically without creating chaos? Or is chaos inevitable? Yeah, you take that.
Yeah, sure. No, I do believe that some people just needs reality as a wake up. Because again, in Sweden's case, you have a lot of people still living in, you know, really good living conditions. They have a nice car, they have a nice apartment, they can go to nice work. Then, of course, they start seeing now, you know, when they walk down the street, maybe late at night, they feel a bit uncomfortable. But I do believe that it needs to be a bit rougher. 5 years into time, I do believe we will see more chaos, more people waking up just because they see reality. So, I mean, you can reach some people via metapolitical message, but some people just have to be reached by, you know, they get carjacked or something because they're so into what they're doing. They want to watch their sports ball. They want to do their drugs. They want to go on their vacations, whatever. They don't care. But if something hurts them, you know, physically or financially, yeah, it's another story. So I just believe it's a matter of they don't care if they're being exploited or if they're decadent. If you say to someone that they're decadent, they're just like, oh, okay, I don't care. But if they get robbed, it's another thing.
Yes, indeed. It's the unpleasant side effects of the situation that often persuade people, and it often has to be a personal experience. I mean, sometimes, as we know, even a terrible personal experience doesn't get through to people. Remember that Swedish politician who felt bad about the migrant who had raped him? Because I mean, it's just incredible. But then, same in my country, there was the guy recently got killed on London Bridge, and his father was using it.
I saw it.
Oh. I mean, it's just amazing. But for normal people, you know, I think the majority of people, these experiences do wake them up. Ideally, though, obviously, you'd want to wake people up without terrible things happening to them. And I think honestly the best thing you can do is be a good example. When people see or hear something from a person they admire, a person who seems sorted out, stable, reliable, and healthy and all that, they're far more likely to believe it. And I think that they're far more likely to take it seriously. And I think a problem with a lot of people in fringe movements, including ours, is that they're, and I include myself in this, is that they're not in the best condition. And so a lot of people just find it easy to dismiss what we see. So that's the first thing I would say. Make sure that you are in a good way so that people will take you seriously, or they are more likely to at any rate. And the other thing is just calm down. I think that's a very important thing. A lot of us on our side feel an urgency to spread the word about what we know and what we understand. And I mean, it's, of course we do. But unfortunately, that works against us because it makes us seem like the crazy person, the crazy, you know, tinfoil hat wearer and so forth. So again, it's important to come across as reasonable. I also think that it's better to allow people to realize things for themselves. Much better to do that than to try to, you know, not just, you know, lead the horse to water, but then, you know, force its head into the water. you're not going to win friends and influence people with that approach. So yeah, that's what
I agree completely. I will reinforce what you're saying. It's you know, when you're too pushy, when you're like coming up screaming in someone's face, it's, you know, we have to act, we have to do something now, they will be like, you know, this guy's crazy, he clearly has some weird opinions because he is a crazy person. But again, as you say, if you're a bit calmer, you just lean back, say, you know what, yeah, I can ask if you want to have any questions, and they say, oh, you know, why are you saying repatriation? And then I say, you know, calmly explain. But if you're too aggressive in the face of people, they will just shy back. It's the same thing with, well, most things. I mean, if you're on vacation in Thailand or something, and you see someone coming out of a shop and say like, oh, you buy now cheap, you will just go away. But if you see another shop where they're a bit more calm, you say like, okay, this is a reputable place. It's the same thing, you know, push and pull. Then of course, also like your own gravitas is huge for when people listen to you. And that's also something we've had as a weakness in a lot of nationalist movements that has been, you know, very decadent with alcohol and unprovoked violence, etc. And it's not really been about portraying our message in the best way. So,
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's something where I often wonder why these people are in the movement at all. And yeah, you know, thankfully there's not that much of that nowadays. It, actually, in the British context, that more often attends the Civnat, stuff like the Tommy Robinson crowd, than it does any proper nationalist thing.
Yeah.
So any thoughts on KSI versus Logan Paul? I don't know what that means.
Right, so it's two YouTubers who went a boxing match against each other. Actually, quite fun. But yeah, no, I don't like boxing. I like training boxing because I like the head movement and the footwork, and of course the punches as well. But boxing as a sport, I don't like it in the least. I prefer MMA. It's more real. Or even K1 stand-up is more real than boxing, because you can do a lot of things in boxing when you don't have someone kicking at your legs or someone who doesn't want to take you down. There's a completely different way to move when you actually have to take kicks and takedowns into consideration. So it's not natural to only punch with your hands. So I'm not a fan of boxing.
Right. Okay. Well, one question for me that occurred to me earlier on, and it was a very obvious question to ask. I should have asked it at the time. The fact that they show your videos in Swedish schools as an example of what the kids should avoid, does that not surely that makes the kids watch your videos?
Yeah, of course. Of course it does. I mean, I've gotten guys saying that literally, like, oh, I found you either via mainstream media or via that sort of stuff.
That's ridiculous. So, how could they not see that coming?
Yeah, but I think also there might be some sort of other, you know, these 40, 50-year-old female teachers watch all of my videos, maybe watch my training videos as well. There might be another motive. I don't know, but but it's quite strange.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. I've really enjoyed this one. I think it's been productive and informative and useful. So thank you very much for doing this.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Okay. So we'll call it a day there. I don't see any other super chats, nothing like that. So, okay. The next one is up in, only 20 minutes away from now. So, okay. And that's with Zurius Music. So that will be, that'll be in 20 minutes. So, okay. In the meantime, Marcus, thank you very much for appearing on Millennial 2019.
And thank you for having me.
Okay. And I'll see the rest of you. Thank you for watching, and I'll see you in about 20 minutes.